out here has flaws.
You know, we all have things that we're overcoming. We all have our own insecurities. And just being able to be open with others actually empowers me as well. Doesn't matter where you come from, who you are currently, or what other people think about who you are. You can become great. You can become incredible, and you can reach for anything that you want to accomplish.
This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake, and we're so happy to be joined by the Tough Enough new champion. The Little Monster is back on the podcast. Welcome back to the podcast.
Excited to be back, and especially now as a brand new strawweight champion of the world for Tough Enough, which is the largest amateur fighting organization currently in the world, so it's pretty cool.
All right, and this is 48 hours, ladies and gentlemen, so she's still, you know, the championship belt and the prestige hasn't gotten to her. She's still able to connect with the people, you know what I'm saying? So she's back wanting to talk to her Ohio Pete. Talk about how that feels. I mean, you hear folks now saying that. I mean, we're saying it on the podcast, champion, you get to say it. How does that make you feel for that organization and just for all the hard work you've been putting in?
You know, I mean, it feels great. It's crazy to, you know, say I am the champion this point, because all of the hard work, you know, like, you got to really focus in on something like that. I mean, months, years in advance, where, like, you're like, yes, like, I'm going to be the world champion. I'm going to do everything that it takes, and I'm going to train. And you just do every single thing and all the details along the way for however long your training camp is. And it's just one moment at a time that just finally adds up to this thing that you've been fabricating in your mind, and then it comes to fruition in your hands, and then there's the belt, and it's really awesome, you know, to fast forward from way back when I was thinking about it and now currently becoming the champion.
You know, how did it feel to get your hand raised? How did you feel about your performance?
I do know that the live feed cut out that where people were not able to watch the rest of the fight. So I'll just kind of go through a little bit of actually what happened during the fight. You know, first round was very good, a lot of back and forth. Second round was really awesome as well. She was actually very good at stuffing most of my takedowns. I ended up pulling guard on her a few times. Most of those times, she actually picked me up and slammed me. So, and which was, like, great on her behalf for game planning against my grappling. At the end of the third round, or the middle of the third round, she actually dislocated her elbow trying to pick me up and slam me, trying to slam out of my guard. And she started backing up and very, you know, holding on to her arm and wincing. Doctors had to come in and actually stop the fight. And that's what gave the TKO victory at the end of the third round. Yeah, it was, you know, kind of bittersweet for me actually winning, because as a competitor, you know, you want to make sure that your athlete is at the best possible condition, that you are at the best possible condition, and you go in there and it's two people at their best duking it out. And when somebody gets hurt, like an injury like that, I mean, that wouldn't have happened had she not been resisting me as hard as she was. But still, you know, I do wish her a speedy recovery. But, yeah, so, you know, winning the belt in that fashion was a little bit different for me. You know, it wasn't the roaring, oh, my gosh, I just won the championship. It was more of like, oh, like, that's how I won? Okay.
Well, a champion is a champion. I mean, we just saw that with the Golden State Warriors adding Kevin Durant. So we don't cry over the hardware. But,
right, that's right.
But tell folks, you that fight was in Vegas, but you've been all over the world, and you just came back to the actual full contact. But you've been grappling in contests all over the world. Give us some of those highlights, and especially what it was like to be in Dubai and receive fighting over there.
Gosh, it's like a fast-forward playing tape reel in my head right now, because I've just been going so ham for the last, like, 4 months, back and forth from California between the Pan Americans taking second at the Pan Am. And, in fact, for grappling on the highest levels, I've actually started going up a weight class, because cutting all that weight was truly affecting my performance, I felt like. And so I won up a weight class, took second at the Pan Am, which was just absolutely mind-blowing. and then getting to go out to Abu Dhabi and fight out there for the World Pro, taking third in the world, which is, I mean, it's mind-blowing. You know, you go out there to a tournament like this, and there is literally, like, at least 2 to 4 competitors in every belt, in every category, from somewhere else in the world. You know, you have people from Sweden and Africa and China, U.S., Brazil, and it's just, it's literally the Olympics of jiu-jitsu, because we're not in the Olympics yet. So that is technically our best and closest form of the Olympics that we're going to get, is being out there in Abu Dhabi and fighting for the Sheiks, and it's a nationally televised event out there. So that really is as big as it gets when it comes to jiu-jitsu, and it was just incredible earning the opportunity to be flown out there, qualifying for a tournament, and having everything, you know, just being treated like a true athlete was wonderful, and then getting to compete on such a huge stage. I mean, there's nothing like it. It feels truly like there's nothing else that you're going to be able to do that's going to be bigger than that. It was definitely an experience of a lifetime, and one that I plan on reliving again next year.
And we're so happy to be joined by the Little Monster on the podcast again, Ohio's own Little Monster, even though she's talking about being all over the world. You talk about the Sheiks and things like that, but they really embrace women's fighting over there. That's what I was trying to get to with that question, which is not the same way that they embrace some of the other things when it comes to dealing with women. And that's what I thought was interesting. Some of your posts like spoke to that, and you were a little bit.
It was definitely different being a woman and going over there. I had a totally different opinion of what it was going to be like. In my, you know, narrow view of what the Middle East was like, to me, I felt like women were going to be very repressed. And going over there, it just didn't feel that way. You know, they wanted you to respect the culture, of course. We actually had to wear a leotard of a uniform that went from our wrists to our ankles to our neck that covered everything. It was like, it was almost like a surfing uniform, but for grappling. And it was like a onesie rash guard, I guess. And it was, you know, because of the way that their culture is over there. And it was very cool. They definitely respect female athletes for what we are as athletes, and that was incredible.
Well, let's talk about social media. You know, the first time we talked to you embraced it a little bit, but now it's like, you know, you have put a megaphone out there for the world to know everything about you. Can you talk about just how, like, you found your own voice and how that's almost maybe opened up some things for you to be able to interact with fans and even your friends and family, especially with traveling, you can still stay connected with folks?
Oh, thank you so much for bringing this up. It's such a huge part of who I am at this point with social media. And I just really feel like, you know, we all need to be ourselves. Every single one of us out here has flaws. You know, we all have things that we're overcoming. We all have our own insecurities. And just being able to be open with others actually empowers me as well, because I'll have that one person, you know, on like such a huge post, and you'll get like all these hundreds of likes, but you have that one person who reaches out to you who's really like, man, I needed to hear that today. I was having a rough time, but because you were open with who you are, it allowed me to be okay with who I am. And things like that are just, I mean, it's insurmountable. Like, the judgment aspect of what I thought people were going to be negative about, it turns out every single time to always be a very positive thing. You know, like, I put it all out there on my past, my present, you know, where I plan on being at in the future. And I'm bold about my future. I'm very humble about my past. You know, where I came from wasn't the best of places. It's just really, really incredible and inspiring to me when I put it out there for other people to see and relate to and grow from with me as I grow.
You talk about more on social than just fighting.
Yeah, I do. And I know that at the end of the day, you know, I'm not going to be able to be an athlete forever. Like, let me just be very realistic with myself. Like, as much as I want to train until I'm 100 years old, being an athlete and being in the limelight is only going to last so long. I think that through everything that I'm doing, I truly do want to inspire people to see that it doesn't matter where you come from, who you are currently, or what other people think about who you are. you can become great. You can become incredible, and you can reach for anything that you want to accomplish. And if people can't see that through what I've been through, being homeless at one point as a teenager and, you know, being on drugs at one point as a teenager, then, you know, I mean, you really can't accomplish anything. And I hope others see that, even past me being an athlete.
Now, you got some help with the athlete side of it, and you talk about traveling. You've been training in Michigan, New Jersey, California. Who's helping you, you know, reach these goals and pushing you when you need to get pushed? I mean, who's some of the folks you've been training with? And also, too, I know you're going to get to it at some point, but we might as well get it out the way. I know you miss Ohio and all your training group down there at Ronan Training Center.
The last time we did an interview together, I was 100% exclusive with Ronan Training Center, and that is always going to be, you know, the butter to my bread, the bread to my butter. Like, that's going to be in my heart and my soul. That's the gym that I started at, and even still, I go down there and I train with them very consistently. I live in Cleveland, like, that's where my family is, and Vitor Oliveira, my jiu-jitsu coach with my gi jiu-jitsu primarily is, I mean, he's still my number one, you know, and it's awesome when I go out to the pans, when I go out to the world, like, he's the one that's there and helping me and doing the training camps with me. I have been going out and slowly kind of transitioning with New Jersey and New York, training a lot with Tom DeBlas. And, you know, Tom DeBlas is just such an incredible person. I know that he's so huge on social media. Like, he's known as, like, the jiu-jitsu philosopher. But as a person, man, that guy, he just keeps it so real, you know. And he's one of the busiest individuals that I know, but he is loyal to the core. That man will message me every single day just to see how I'm doing, how I'm feeling, whether I'm there in New Jersey or not. And, you know, I think that loyalty is one thing where you can sit down and have a conversation with somebody about, like, oh, like, you know, how do you feel about us? How do we feel about you? But showing it is a whole nother thing. And they have truly shown that to me. You know, gotten a chance to train with Gary Tonin out there a lot, as well as Gordon and Nikki Ryan, which are just, I mean, they are all absolutely incredible athletes. Like, there's world class, and then there's whatever level they happen to have created. So, and it's really cool to be able to train out there doing no-gi with them. And I've been up in Michigan a lot training MMA with Amanda Bobby Cooper and her coach, James Gray. And he's also right now going into the UFC as well. Amanda Cooper, ABC, actually won the house for the straw weights at 115. So, and I mean, she's just, you know, gritty. She's an amazing boxer. She's a crazy, amazing fighter. So being able to be out there with them and helping me focus, they have a lot of girls out there. So it's, you know, people ask me, like, well, where are you training? And, you know, who are you training under? And right now it's like, depending on what tournament I have to do and where my focus needs to lie, depends on where I'm at. And where do I need to be at that point? Like, what part of the country am I in at that moment? But those are the people who are really helping me out the most.
Well, that's the who's who, if you want to hit all the names. I mean, do you want to put any other legends in there? I mean, so.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, those are the people who they really have my back. It doesn't matter where I go or what I'm doing. Like, they are always going to be there for me and help support me and help me grow and go all the way out of their way for me, which is, you know, you're just not going to get that anywhere else. So I'm blessed to have so many people who are helping me.
Now, we know you have a strong Brazilian jiu-jitsu background. I mean, that goes without saying, the grappling is there, you know. But how much have you been focusing on striking in your training, especially with the move to full contact?
It's so cool to me that, like, everybody knows me so well for my jiu-jitsu. But before jiu-jitsu, like, I've been training for 7.5 years, and I've been doing grappling for about 4.5 at this point. So before that, I was a Muay Thai fighter. I was a kickboxer. Mm-hmm. And I
maybe we don't need to give those secrets away on this podcast. Your opponents will get the.
you know, I fought at Muay Thai Nationals out there in Iowa, and I used to do tons of kickboxing tournaments. And that's, you know, that's my core. Like, that's where I came from. That was before jiu-jitsu. I didn't even want to do jiu-jitsu. I cried on the mats for 6 months. Like, let me just do Muay Thai. I can just punch people in the face. So I think the hardest part about doing full contact and doing MMA is learning how to combine my Muay Thai, you know, from more of an MMA stance, and learning how to combine my jiu-jitsu and, you know, take it down with wrestling instead of just doing things like pulling guard, which is what I love to do in jiu-jitsu, and it's my go-to. It's what I'm good at. So, it has. It's been quite the transition, really trying to shuffle all of that stuff together into one, because I feel like I have two primary arts and everything else just kind of is in the in-between.
So with going into the cage for, you know, the folks that might not ever do that, you get inside there and you know, everybody says they have a plan until they get hit. How do you, you know, focus down, you know, if you do feel the pain and whatnot? Is it like you said, you pull guard a couple times in this last, you know, do you go to what you feel, or is this, the question is, have you gotten to the point now where you're still going to execute the game plan that your coach has laid out for you?
Well, people see me competing like literally biweekly, if not weekly. And I do that, number one, out of the passion, but number two, I want to create as much comfort inside those confines that I can. You know, I want it to feel like home. I want it to feel like I've been here 100,000 times. I've been in trouble 100 times, and I've gotten out of trouble 102 times. So, you know, when I'm in there, getting hit, getting punched in the face, it's nothing new to me. It doesn't, you know, it's not foreign. I've done that before, and I can just grit right through that. I am good at sticking to game plans that are implemented, you know, once they're set. I can listen to my coaches when I'm in there. And I think that as a new fighter, that's really hard for people to do. And, I mean, please understand, I mess up a lot, okay? I'm very stubborn, and I guess if I'd have to call it a downfall, that would be it. But, you know, finding comfort in the cage is so huge, and knowing how not to get too anxious and how not to let your nerves get to you too much, but also to still have those nerves and know that it's okay to, you know, feel semi-animalistic while you're in there and be aggressive. So I think it's so important to find that balance and know what that balance is for you.
Made the announcement with my guy at Wombat Sports. It's been all over social media, but tell people what the next goal is, because we want to see you in the cage and we want to see you that comfortable, definitely with your new plan. So will you share that with people, with an Ohio Bias listeners?
I'm going pro! Yes, it's finally that time. I've been fighting for way too long now, and I know that I haven't done MMA in some time, but, you know, especially after winning that title, like, I'm going pro. That was the largest amateur fighting organization possible, and in the strawweight division, I just feel very comfortable with my jiu-jitsu. Why not get punched? I'm already getting punched in the face. I might as well start getting paid for it. And I feel comfortable enough in my skills. So let's do this thing. You know, I do have views to be in the UFC. I have views to be the UFC world champion for the strawweight division. Bold statement, watch me make it happen. One moment at a time, you know, one fight at a time, one training session at a time. And I work backwards from there. Reverse engineering this shit, and let's go after it. And let's get it. I know that it's a long road to get there, but one moment at a time, I will. So that's my goal, and I don't have any plans right now on organizations on who I'm going to fight for my first few pro fights, but, you know, that's my next goal.
Very good. We're going to get you out of here on this one. Do you want to mention any sponsors, the shout-outs? You talked about the people that you train with, but we know there's a lot more people behind the scenes supporting you. And then tell folks how they can follow the inspiration, the introspection, everything that you do on social media, and then make sure they're keeping up with your career. So we know the next time you're fighting, and hopefully this time the feed stays live.
Thank you so much. Definitely a huge shout-out to Vitor Oliveira, GF team. Definitely James Gray over at SFS and Tom DeBlas over in New Jersey with Gary Tonin as well. But the way that people can follow me, honestly, I'm biggest on Snapchat. I Snapchat every single day. That's Monster Demo, so you can definitely travel around the world with me that way. Follow me on Facebook at Crystal Vanessa Demopoulos and on Instagram with Little Monster Demo, L-I-L, Monster Demo. You know, I look forward to seeing all you guys. I'm super interactive. you ever send me a shout out, I'll definitely hit you guys back. So thank you so much for having me here on this podcast. You know, you guys were one of the originals, and I'll always come back and talk to you guys. Thank you.
Well, we're so happy the little monster is becoming even scarier because you're getting stronger and you're really bringing the pain to people. So thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Have an incredible day. Bye, everybody.
All right. You can hear more of things like this on With an Ohio Bias. Be checking us out, withanohiobias.com. You can find us on iTunes, the full podcast on iTunes. Just search With an Ohio Bias. Give us a like, subscribe, and write us a review even. And we would really appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and we will talk at you next time.